Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And James Kovacevic.
Hey, James. You know, I'm so glad our listeners could join us. And because we were just chatting about a question that came in the other day from one of our listeners. And I don't know if you remember, but almost a year ago, I think a little over a year ago, actually, according to my notes, we recorded two podcasts, one on the challenges to collecting failure data. And that was in episode 204. And 205, we recorded we're in a challenge state of mind at that point, challenges to doing a root cause analysis. Do you recall those?
I think so. We were talking about doing root cause analysis, getting the right data when we were trying to, or having the right data available when trying to execute a root cause analysis, that sort of stuff, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there's some of that. There was one is, you know, well, what do you collect and how do you get it into your CMMS and how do you make it useful to collect for your team, that kind of stuff. And then root cause is getting the ops manager off your back to, hey, we got to find out what happened so we can actually fix it. It's not the same if we just put the cover on and run it. It's going to be broken again tomorrow. Let's fix it. Those kinds of challenges. And I think we don't want to go back into that, but the question was in the realm of, well, how do you guys, in those episodes, we talked about what those challenges were and a few ideas to overcome it. What we didn't do is say, well, here's the benefits for doing it right. Right? If we actually get good field data or our failure data, and we do the due diligence to get to root cause and actually implement fixes that fix the real problem, so what? Why do we want that stuff? Why do we want to overcome these challenges? And I thought that was a fair question. I don't know. Have you ever had that discussion to why are you doing this? What do you need this root cause for? We got it running.
You know what? At the lower levels on the shop floor, yes, I've gotten that. Usually from the higher levels, I haven't gotten that type of feedback or comments. Mm-hmm. But it comes down to, yeah, you may have fixed it quickly, so you reduced, you know, the mean time to repair, if you will. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that it's going to not fail again, right? And that's the whole goal, is we want to get rid of these failures. It's part of the defect elimination process. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have the data and we don't do a good root cause analysis, then chances are that problem is going to come back up again. Eventually, at some point, we're going to have to deal with it again. And you know what? We may be a little bit faster at getting that repair done again, but we still got to deal with it. That's and right. Root cause analysis is about eliminating those pain in the back problems that, you know,
yeah,
plague
us. I think if I remember right, I think you used the whack-a-mole analogy. Because if you fix the symptoms, the underlying root cause will just continue to manifest itself in various ways. And you're fixing this and fixing that, and you're running around trying to fix stuff, but you're not really fixing the problem. So that's a gist of, I think, why we want to get in. Let's dive into that in a moment here. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, it's Fred here. Did you know that Carl Carlson and I are writing a book on reliability engineering management? Based on the feedback and encouragement of our students and clients, we have set out to write a practical book to help you improve your next project's reliability performance and your organization's ability to create reliable products. For a limited time, the draft chapters are available for free for you to read and review. Become a reviewer of this new work at ascendoreliability.com/go/REM.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of them is root cause is obvious, right? If we actually fix the real problem, we're not back out there again. Over and over again and fixing similar related problems from that underlying cause. And it just saves us all a bunch of time and energy and downtime. But not all root causes can be done very quickly. So it's kind of this escalating scale of, you know, what's that balance and trade-off? And when when do you say, all right, I got to get it running? But then the hard part for me is then finding the rationale to come back and actually find the root cause. It's keeping it on the schedule, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's, you know, depending upon the maturity of the organization, there's going to be different triggers for when do you do a quick, you know, basic root cause out on the floor with a couple of mechanics and electricians mm-hmm. and the operators. There'll be triggers that, well, okay, now we got to get a maintenance or reliability engineer involved to help work through this. And, you know, there'll be different levels of escalation required depending upon the severity of that event. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think those will change over time with organizations as well, as they're a bit immature in their root cause analysis process. They're dealing with lots of stuff. You know, you may have higher thresholds that dictate when you're going to do a formal root cause. As you get better and you have less of them, you'll probably tighten up those, and you may not be doing them as often, but you still have a tighter trigger to do it. So mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's not a one size fits all trigger list. It really depends upon your organization. Yeah. Would I spend time doing a root cause analysis on something that had minimal impact on production, health, safety, quality, environment? Probably not, unless it was a massive failure and caused huge amounts of maintenance dollars. Then no, I probably wouldn't pay much attention to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with you. Sometimes there's things that it's a no-brainer. You just got to go sort this out and understand exactly what happened. And other times, though, once you start paying attention to that and you start moving out of the firefighting mode, it gets low, you know, less and less on that severity scale. But it starts to go after the things that are small problems that occur often. You know, they might not be a dangerous situation. They might cause a lot of damage, but a quick jam, for example, an operator resets a bottle in a bottling line and everything keeps going, or pulls the jam out and resets and it keeps going. Cleans the sensor real quick and the system's back up in 10 seconds. If that happens every 3 minutes, at some point that's a problem, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I agree with you. It's going to vary. But what I see is the biggest benefit of it is that you're fixing things systemically, whether it's the equipment, the processes you're using to run that equipment, or the material set, or the design of the product, or something, that then it just is designed out. It's eliminated. We don't have that problem anymore. And it could go to all kinds of different parts of the system. It could go into the lubrication scheduling. It could go into the type of material is not appropriate for this equipment types of issues. All kinds of areas that we could touch into. if the objective is to reduce downtime, unscheduled downtime in particular, understanding the root cause is really, correct me if I'm wrong, James, but I think that's the only way that you can effectively minimize your downtime, is understanding why things aren't working.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there was a study, and it was from the manufacturing game, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And it did a comparison of, you know, if you implemented just preventative maintenance and you left out root cause analysis or defect elimination and planned scheduling, you'd actually see an increase in downtime. If you incorporated just planning, there was a small improvement, just scheduling a small improvement, implementing both planning, scheduling, and preventive maintenance, you know, you saw an uptick in performance. Mm-hmm. But that was minuscule compared to the impact if you had a proper root cause analysis program in place, systematically eliminating these, whether they're small reoccurring issues or these larger events from occurring again. That was the only way you can really drive sustainable improvements. And that's what you really need to do. You need to have that defined criteria. You need to have a repeatable process as well for root cause analysis, not just conducting the analysis, but actually, okay, we found the problem. Here's our recommendations. How do we implement these solutions? How do we track them to make sure these solutions are actually implemented and validate them, that mm-hmm, they worked? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in my world, I'd call that a fracas system, a failure reporting and corrective action system. And it includes the short term and then proof that you fixed it. And I think is it Deming cycle?
The PDCA?
PDCA is another technique or approach exactly. that people say to use. And it's way too easy to say, all right, we put the fix in. And then it takes discipline to actually go back and see if it actually worked. You know, we got it. The next issue, it just happened. So we got to rush off to that and we start investigating and solving and implement effects. And if you don't check, it's really hard to learn what's working and what's not working. Did you miss something? Was it really the root cause? And I find in organizations that part breaks more often. And it does take discipline to circle back. And did we actually fix it or not?
Yeah, it takes a lot of discipline. One of the things I found in a past life was they're really good at triggering root cause analysis. Mm-hmm. You know, if it was more than 30 minutes, they were doing a level one. If there was more than 2 hours, they were doing a level two and so on and so forth. They're really good at that. Mm-hmm. And while the documentation of the actual root cause analysis wasn't the greatest, they always had a lot of good actions coming out of it. But what would happen is they would implement the first two or three actions, whether it was, you know, changing a procedure, doing a redesign, changing a material, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And they're really good at those first two, three things. And then the rest would slip off the radar because now at this point, it's, you know, weeks or months beyond when that event occurred.
That's right. Yet, you know, you might change the design of something to accommodate a material, yet the systemic change was how did you qualify that material to run on the equipment to start with? You know, where was the checks and balances to know that we were capable of running this stuff?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, kinds of things. That's a lot harder to do. It calls for other departments. We got to get procurement involved. We might have to work with some vendors. We have to look at a longer term study to understand what our equipment's capable. It becomes a bigger and bigger investment sometimes to make sure that you really solve the problem.
Oh, absolutely. And that's where that started to break down. So what would happen is 6 months, 9 months, a year would go by and this failure would occur. And then someone on the team would recognize, hey, we did this before. Mm-hmm. So they'd go pull up the old root cause analysis and they'd look and they'd see, oh, we never implemented actions 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Oh, okay. Let's do number 4 and see how well it goes. Maybe we get 2 years out of it.
So that would happen repeatedly. They'd go through and implement some of the ones that they missed, and then it would happen. And because they weren't going after those systemic type issues, they're knocking off the easy ones because maintenance could do that in a weekend or a day or whatever the case mm-hmm, was. Mm-hmm. But those longer term ones, those harder ones, systemic ones, they were pretty much just bypassing because they were too hard.
Yeah.
And that's where the discipline comes in, is you have to have support from senior leadership, other departments, other functions to be able to tackle those harder systemic issues.
Well, let's look at, I mean, the value of doing it right. Yes, it takes, let's say it's going to cost you $50,000 to do the proper root cause analysis and implement the corrective actions. Somebody's going to say, all right, that's an investment. And they're going to say it's either worth it or not, right? There's going to be a decision. And let's say they approve it. Yeah, go do that. In the scenario you just described, which I've seen plenty of times, is it takes time and energy and work to make that happen. What I think the question we got, though, is more on, well, why are we doing this investment? What's the benefit, right? And it's, to me, it's that $50,000 investment is going to save you $500,000 over the next few years, is because your downtime is reduced, your equipment runs more cleanly, you're making more consistent product. You're not called out in the middle of the night. I think we were recording an episode for you, James, and you related the story of getting called out after. It wasn't your fault. The product had changed. The shift changed, and they're like, "Hey, your equipment's not running any well anymore." It's like, "Come on!"
Yeah, you eliminate that sort of stuff that drives people crazy if you have a good defect elimination or root cause analysis program.
But it's really after, I think, is you got to quantify the impact to the downtime, your maintenance staff and your technicians and the people involved. The frustration is, well, this never gets done. We're just going to be spinning our wheels, fixing the same thing over and over again. It's job satisfaction kinds of pieces to it. Downtime and the cost that add, and we can avoid. Product quality, which is a real cost out, and your customers will notice that part of it. It's each plant's going to have a different set of priorities of what's the driving goal for that. But tying that investment in doing the root cause to those priorities, whether it's uptime improvement or yield improvement or product quality improvements or a mix of all three, is you can very quickly say, hey, look, if we fix this thing and we really fix it, it's going to save us, you know, a week, a year of unnecessary repairs. There's real numbers to that. And we're not down that week, a year. That has real numbers behind it based on your throughput and so on. So I think the way to calculate the benefits will vary depending on each particular circumstance, but it doesn't take too much to find where those numbers are and to remember those as you go into those brainstorming meetings to figure out how to redesign a piece of equipment with other departments, because one, it's the right thing to do. Two, you've got management approval to spend the money and go do it. And three, it actually creates a benefit for you and your team, whether you're on the maintenance team or at operations or in engineering, is you don't have to revisit this stuff and keep fixing things that you really could solve. Is that
yeah.
good summary?
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
All right. Now, failure data, right? One of the challenges we talked about was actually collecting good data. So part of that is the root cause analysis, but even things like what failed and when, I find lacking in so many plants. If I had my choice, do good root cause analysis. What I find, though, is that at some point you have way too many things that you need to dive into it, and you have to have these severity-based triggers to start knocking things off. It's the failure data, the time to failure information, and down to the equipment. Was it at first? It might be just a motor failed, or it might be a bearing failed, or it might be a sensor failed. Later, you can refine it further. But I think collecting time to failure data can help you really improve your overall maintenance program, which is a long term process. And I think yes. that's the challenge that we face.
Oh, absolutely. It's not easy to collect specific failure mode data, life data, you know, if you will. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's difficult enough to find out what motor it was on that particular asset. You know, that's if right. there's five motors, at least tell us which one it was.
That's right.
Once you can get that, then you get the specific failure mode, you know, the actual death date or failure date, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then going back in history, you can see when was the last time that was replaced or a new one installed, but only if we are identifying what specific motors it was.
Yeah.
With that, then we can start doing, you know, the reliability growth analysis, Weibull analysis. We can start doing a lot of stuff like that, which mm-hmm. is the long-term play.
But it is. Yep.
That's really how you start getting to the maximum uptime and also refining your current maintenance strategy.
You might be doing things unknowns to you that are actually harming your process.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
The data will tell you one way or the other, are you helping or hurting your system? Yeah. It's feedback to the maintenance team. Are we doing the right thing? Are we lubricating often enough or not often enough and so on? I think another big benefit is if you're going to do prognostic health management or predictive maintenance, right? Use this data to look at where you need to measure and inspect and check. So things that are wearing out, you don't have to really inspect them too often early on. But as you know that that asset's aging, well, then let's pick up our vibration analysis. Let's do a bit more oil analysis. Let's pay attention to these things a bit more closely to see what condition they're in and then run our maintenance on it. But if you don't collect the data, it's really hard to know which ones are critical for you to start paying closer attention to.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost impossible to figure out which ones you need to be paying attention to.
The one with the smoke coming out of it comes to mind.
Yeah.
When it's not supposed to.
When you let out the factory installed smoke, you know it's time to look at it. But that's aside
right.
from that.
That's right. The factory installed smoke. Is that a real thing?
It is for electronics, from what I understand.
No. I don't think so. That reminds me of when I was first in the Army, right? I was a private E1 right out of high school, and I got assigned to a Jeep. And other than the 1 or 2 days a month that we actually drove the thing, the rest of the time I was doing maintenance on it. You know? So every day it would be, you know, wash the windshield, clean the headlights, check the windshield wipers. It was a bunch of first level operator maintenance type stuff. And then it would become due to an oil change and lubrication. I had never seen a grease gun before. I had no idea, you know, and the manual says, you know, find the 15 fittings and give them enough grease. What? There's 15 of these things? You know, where are they? That was a learning experience. The challenge was, I mean, the benefits was, is that I didn't get stranded on the side of the road. My Jeep didn't fail. And over my military career, I was in a lot of stranded vehicles, some of which I was in charge of their maintenance and others I wasn't in various circumstances. But that first lesson was, the benefit is we still have a job. I can still get, you know, accomplish the mission in the military setting. But it also comes with, if I don't have the failure data, I can't write that operating manual of saying, hey, go do check these things. You know, some of it is off of the supplier's checklist, but is that relevant for our environment? Because I do remember our motor sergeant would come down and say, all right, hey, we're in the dry season, right? We're expecting rain next month. Everybody change their windshield wipers. Just change them. We know they're all dried out and cracked right now. Just change them. And he would order all the stuff and we'd go out and do that. But, and it was local, you know, seasonally driven by his experience to a large extent. But he had the data. He had the information. He had his order history over the last 4 or 5 years that he could use to say, here's what we need to have available. If he didn't have that data and he was first time in that environment, it would be wait till it fails and go fix it. More downtime.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. No, your story, this idea of factory installed smoke, is that same motor sergeant wanted me to learn where all the different facilities were in the maintenance of our vehicles. So he sent me out looking for some, a road wheel inner tube. These were track vehicles. And, you know, the battalion sergeant said, I'm fresh out of that. You got to go up to the next stage. And, you know, our DeVardi motor pool and DeVardi guy was like, he'd laugh for a minute and goes, yeah, I haven't seen one of those in a while. We don't carry them here. You have to go up to depot for that. And I was gone all day. Traipsing all over the post looking for a road wheel inner tube, you know, and he showed me the grease nipple on the side of the road wheel for the bearings and goes, yeah, that's where we inflate it. This one's low. I'm out. Can you go up to battalion and see if you can find one?
Sure. Whatever you want.
Yeah. Yes, sir. You know, off I go. And, the guy at depot wasn't alerted that I was coming. Everybody else was in on the game. And the guy at depot looked at me like, kid, there's no such thing. He said, you know, go get a cup of coffee, have a nice lunch, and then take your time getting back there. They sent you on a wild goose chase.
Hey, it happens. It happens. You gotta bust in the new guys one way or another.
Yep. Yep. Well, you know, and it's fun. It's enjoyable. You know, it's also one of the benefits of having a good maintenance program is that there's a camaraderie. There's a willingness to make improvements. You're part of the team. And, you know, having a little fun on here and there, don't hurt anybody. But it helps to build that team and camaraderie. I think that's all good. I think we actually talked about some of this stuff at one point. If we didn't, we'll have to come back to it.
Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah.
At one point.
So anyway, James, appreciate it. As always, it's a pleasure. And for our listeners, thanks for joining us. And if you'd like to join the conversation, as it sparked this conversation today, is head over to reliability.fm. And there you can find James's Rooted in Reliability show. You can find Speaking of Reliability and other shows in our network. And you can find suggestion boxes, comment fields. You can find our emails or contact information and let us know what question you have. So please feel free to join us in and provide us a comment or some feedback or a question you would like us to pursue. So with that, James, we'll get on with the rest of our day and go fix things and find out what's going wrong or vice versa. Let's find what's going wrong first and then fix it. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't want to do it the other way because then we'll just introduce premature failures.
That's right. That's right. We got to listen to our own show again, I think. All right. Great. Thanks, James. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yep. Take her easy, Fred. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.